You have to gauge different kinds of genocide. Anyway, poster Nanya at 8:21 speaks for me, more or less. There are a number of decent responses to this story, actually. Moving on.
2015 Review, a memoir on the fascist resurgence. From Human Iterations by William Guinness. I've been around a long time, blah, blah. I've seen it all before, blah, blah. I read popular science fiction, blah, blah. Primitivists have their heads in the clouds, blah, blah. For some of us, it's been too many years of Gillis's demagoguery. I can't even summon the energy anymore.
Off the Algorithm, Castigate the Optimist. From Ignited in Dark, Against the Dominant Idea by Wolfina. Wolfina has graced the site before with their articulate, informed, and referenced rants, and this is another solid example, notwithstanding the occasional awkward coinage. I'm looking at you, societarianism. Quote.
Societarianism?
Societarianism. Quote, yep, this is how it is. We awake, inhale our choice flatulence and delirience, then rampage through the world like it's all our playground to abuse, break, and discard, never to improve, adapt, and reasonably balance. Worse still, if one has any more than millions of dollars from connections with private death squad technologies or the like, that is the standard for living and doing, not a standard of interrelating on free and level ground, but of pursuing hierarchies within hierarchies. The notion that the existence of a hierarchy is the seed of life, with living exaltation belonging to the in-group. Unquote. I'm sure there's a name for a literate expression of feelings, philosophy, and politics that is not meant to convince, but mainly to reflect and perhaps a little bit to inspire. Whatever that word is, use it here.
Debanking, attack on anarchist Black Cross Dresden solidarity work. From anarchist Black Cross Dresden. GLS is a significant bank in Germany. It has shut down two accounts related to ABC Dresden for specious information about why they cited technical issues. Quote, what is happening here is part of a broader pattern of various state and non-state attacks against left-wing and anti-fascist structures in Germany, Europe, and across the rest of the world. The persecution, criminalization, and obstruction of anti-fascist work take place on many different levels. Debanking is one tool used within the current developments and the increasingly far-reaching and visible shift towards fascism targeting structures that fight it. Unquote. Hard to argue with that analysis.
Statement of the Anarchist Front in support of popular strikes in Iran from Anarchist Front. A supplement to whatever news you have coming out of Iran and a statement of support for strikers, of course. Quote, the Anarchist Front believes that only through horizontal solidarity cooperation, self-organization, self-management, and decentralized action can we stand against this destructive cycle. Street protests and strikes are not riots, but an attempt to reclaim voice, human dignity, and the right to collective self-determination, and a form of social resistance to the imposed order of the ruling rentier mafia capitalist state that has no real power or response to solve the livelihood crisis. Unquote.
Obituaries for Comrade Georgia K. from Athens Indie Media. A touching eulogy. Quote, always unifying, she put the movement and the cause above all ego, despite her age and experiences. She never claimed infallibility and absolute truth, and sought to come into contact and collaborate with much younger comrades. Her political journey through her passages in the Migrants Hangout, in the 111 occupation, Solidarity Fund, the Kanjali Anarchist Group, the Assembly of Anarchists for the Insurrectionary Perspective, the Athens Indie Media Management Team, and of course her beloved self-organized radio station of 1431, would not stop until death. From today, every December 22nd will dawn brighter. Her memory will illuminate the paths we will walk, our joys, our sorrows, our defeats, and our victories. Unquote. She sounds like Bev I. May both linger in memory.
Audio and video, Black Arms to Hold You Up with Ben Passmore, The Final Straw Radio, an hour and 3 minutes. Sound is a bit echoey on Passmore's side, but I only missed a few words, I think. There's engaging bits here about how to write a book that seeks to pique versus satiate a reader's interests, the role of graphic novels in representing historical events and people, how to write from an anarchist perspective without ideology, and the non-ideology of pragmatism. I was definitely disappointed that the questioner did not dig deeper into Passmore's early juxtaposition of black nationalism and anarchist thought, or what formats Passmore thought would be better to represent history. I would argue that a combination of image and text, especially one with the subjectivity of hand drawing, is as close to ideal a format as I can imagine, for example. As with any reasonable historical project, Passmore cites the question of who to trust, how to get reliable information, and the problem of sometimes just never knowing. Some wisdom for folks about what it means to fight without seeing the results you want. I will definitely be getting this book. I think I will have many generative disagreements with it. Fun! His part stops at about 50 minutes. That was Black Arms to Hold You Up.
This is Chi-Chi.
And Donnie fucking don't.
Happy New Year.
Happy fucking New Year.
I guess. The topic of the week. 2025, the year past, the year ahead. Posted on December 29th, 2025.
As 2025 comes to a close, let's take a look back at the ongoing social upheavals worldwide, inspiring anarchist actions, and the multimedia that have kept you going through it all. 2025, a year in review, and the year ahead. What have been your favorite anarchist actions, communiques, new projects and events, IRL and AFK, from this past year? We all know IRL is in real life, AFK is away from the keyboard. Because...
I didn't know, thank you.
Yeah, because some people would say that the internet is also real life at this point. On the opposite end, is there a specific anarchist critique of things that stands out or a list of embarrassments for the anarchist milieu that happened over the year? What anarchist projects and spaces are you looking forward to in the future? What new to you anarchist spaces and places have you visited lately? What have been the most intriguing anarchist texts, books, videos, music, and other multimedia to come out over the past year? Why? At risk of creating a comment thread of lonely links, add some information and perhaps a little sentiment to help readers understand the importance to you. We'd also like to celebrate, pay homage, and remember by sharing a list of 35 anarchists who have passed away over the 2025 year. Leslie Fish, George Esquivel Elliot, Samuel Paradiso, Freddie Bear, Ignatius, Peter Watkins, Rolf Dupuy, Christos Spilios, Osvaldo Escribano, Vincent Scotti Irin, Gianfranco Sanguinetti, Val Todorov, Graham Moss, Tarun Bartia, Mario Condotto, John Englert, Georgios Garbis, Goffredo Fofi, David Chican, Aurora Fea, Jean Tezar, Octavio Aberola, Sorignac, Richard Mandel, Snezana Paraskevedu, Colin Gerwood, Henri Frederic Blanc, Olga Rashigny, Petra Kraus, Colette Marlowe Nidoruti, Nikos Pelekostas, John Cousin, Despina, Alicia King, Murphy Hoops, and Robert Paul Wolf.
Yeah, Colette Marlowe, was she the daughter? I think she was Durruti's daughter. So Ned Durruti is because, yeah, she was born. Yeah, just an addition.
Yeah.
people know. Sorry.
No, that's great.
I just felt inclined to say it.
Yeah. And I'm sure everyone has connections and their lives touched one of these people in one way or another. Murphy Hoops was just a charming and stunning individual in my life for a long time, who I had the pleasure of living in multiple cities with at different, not with him, but in the same city with him in a number of years and working on different projects with. And yeah, he is greatly missed this year. Okay.
Yeah.
So, where should we start?
Well, I do have a... So, I did try to make my homework. I couldn't because I'm... Okay, let's start with that, with one thing. So, on the New Year's Eve, we went to spend with some friends and we decided to take some tarot cards about the year past, the year present, and the year to come. And my year to come card was five of spades, I think, that we concluded it means defeat, but I need not to worry because it's not that I'm going to be defeating something in particular. It's just the theme of my life this year. So, so yeah, I started great. I already was defeated when trying to prepare. But okay, but here's something that was not defeated last year, and that's what I want to start. Like, I was looking through some of the A News just to try to refresh my mind, and I saw that January 25th, there was, like, South Asian Anarchist Library was, like, struggling to come up. And then in December, like right now, they finally succeed. So, yay, cheers to them.
That's fantastic.
South Asia Anarchist Library is up and running.
Booyah. That's fantastic. Yeah, I'm the general news junkie of this pair.
Yeah.
It's true. So I've got a lot of opinions, I guess, about the year. I'll start. You had the good idea of going back over a year of A News and picking out a few. And I did that last night, and a couple in particular that I felt like were pretty broad.
Mm-hmm.
One that I will withhold or not have opinions on, but the continuing debate in Eastern, Central, Western Europe, and the Balkans over militarism and over anarchists' role in state-on-state conflicts. Belarus ABC and Solidarity Collectives and a series of other groups in Ukraine put out statements and then were responded to by other anarchists that identified as strictly anti-militarist. So that's definitely an ongoing and heated debate within the anarchist milieu.
Yeah.
You know, with, I think, solid points on either side. You have thoughts or ideas around that that you want to share?
I not yet.
Yeah. I think to me it's interesting because I don't have a lot to interact with it in the moment. It's very much one of those things where, like, I don't have answers for now. I have, like, a look back, you know, where I come from a generation of anarchists that protested against NATO and were against NATO, and I do firmly believe that the goal of NATO, one of the goals of NATO in the past 20 years, has been to try to instigate a situation in Ukraine involving Russia, you know? And yet, like, that doesn't offer answers or help to, like, the people on the ground suffering the invasion now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway. The next article that I ran into that I maybe have... And again, this is one article as a stand-in for a much larger subject that has racked my brain for the last at least 2 years, just absolutely fucking brutally, which is Julian Langer's article on anti-Semitism that I know throughout it, and again, this is a stand-in for people we know that I have conversations with semi-regularly, increasingly frustratingly. And it just, the fixation on, it's not how I want to start that. He hedges a lot and he, you know, keeps saying he's against the nation state of Israel. And I believe him, you know, on every front, but I know we're not supposed to play identity politics, but this is my caveat here. Half my family are from great grandparents that fled the czarist pogroms, and we, to my knowledge, don't have any family back in what is now Belarus and was Russia. You know, people, as the U.S. falls apart, are talking about, oh, do you have family here? Or someone asked me, oh, if you have family in Italy or you have family in Ireland. I, to my knowledge, have no family in any European or otherwise country to try to figure out a passport to. So I'm just putting that out there as my weird little shield from what I'm going to say next is I think the continued centering of non-institutional level anti-Semitism is fucking baby shit. I think in the U.S., there is not institutional anti-Semitism when you get pulled over, assuming your skin color is light, you are red as white. You get pulled over as a white person. And if you're not pulled over as a white person, it's because of your skin color, still not because you're Jewish. If you're applying for a job, you know, no one's looking at you at their fucking law firm or their bank or their tech company or anything like that, being like, I don't know, that's kind of a Jewish last name. Should we hire that person? You know, you're not losing an apartment, you know, based on your Latin. So someone's like, I don't know if those folks are, you know, can regularly pay rent, right? You're not getting sidelined into the dumb classes in school. Like, I just, I'm trying to blank on his name. The one I really like, the fucking Crocodile Tears. Go pause it for one sec. All right, sorry to sound editor. Gonna pick it back up momentarily. I think one of the folks that I've really related to in the last couple of years has been Norm Finkelstein, he has a similar analysis of systematic anti-Semitism in the U.S. And, you know, that's not to say that anti-Semitism doesn't exist. It's just to say, and that it's not a problem and that it's not a threat. But it's just to say that this continued centering of it emotionally for people living in the United States is just fucking infantile and not recognizing scale. Yeah, and so I found the whole essay pretty frustrating, and probably I came to that essay with a dozen other conversations in my head that different lines in that essay, you know, were stand-ins for.
Yeah, where I just have a question, because I think I agree with you, like, with thinking anti-Semitism here in the U.S., it's something different, you know, like, it's, in general, I mean... there is, of course, but it's not how it's been pictured, at least. So my question, this is to introduce my question. So my question is, where does he guys is writing from? You know, where is he from? Where is he writing? Where is he living?
Geographically?
Yes.
Portland, Oregon.
Okay. Because I have a friend.
Yeah, he's not writing from like Tehran, you know.
Yeah, no, but that's because it matters. And I think that's using this as an excuse to poop on internet again. this thing, and I just started to think it now. I mean, intentionally, that we hear a lot of things about all over the world, but we interpreted them based on our reality. And that's like very complicated. So because I do, like I was discussing with a friend that lives across the ocean from here. And he's like, I've been seeing like on the street anti-Semitism thing. Like I've been seeing that. And I want to believe him because he's there, he's seeing it, and also he lives in a region that it's much more closer to the conflicts. And I do think it makes a difference. Like when we talk about borders in other places, like the border itself is where you have like the most strong conflicts. Like it doesn't matter which country you're talking about. We easily can talk about the US, like the states that are closer to the border is like where you will find more a stronger pronunciation and stronger people will be more explicitly about their prejudice and all that.
But can I name the country? I mean, it's a friend. It's not.
Sure.
You're not. I mean, the country is Greece. And we looked that up afterwards. And the articles around quote unquote anti-Semitism in Greece intentionally conflate harassment of Israeli tourists by the left and anarchists with Golden Dawn style anti-Semitism.
Okay.
Right. And that's that to me, I think that's my frustration with all the anti-Semitism discourse right now is there is anti-Semitism. There's the shit that Candace Owens has been ramping up all year. And there's the shit that Tucker Carlson has been like kind of on her tail, but without using the words the way she does. And so there is this rising anti-Semitism on the right, but it is people are acting like it's on the left or on the anti-Israel or anti-Palestinian genocide side. And I'm sorry, I don't think that harassment of Israeli tourists is anti-Semitism. I think that's like chasing white South Africans out of somewhere in the middle of apartheid.
Yeah.
And I understand that those individual Israelis may not have like done anything, but like that's what happens when you live in a country that does the things, right? You and I traveled to a country where we were probably almost certainly treated negatively because of the fact that I was American. And I did not hold it against those people, right? I was like, yeah, that's just what it means to be American, is to be allowed everywhere and welcome very few places. And that's just a thing. You like that's not anti anything to me. You know?
I know, but I still prefer to take this, even this news we've read, and I prefer to take it with a grain of salt. And I do trust my friend, and I do trust his observations. And I'm sure it's much more complicated and gray than being like anti nor anti or you know, and from Israel or not. I think it's probably much more, not probably, it is much more complicated than that. I just think that's a good call to, like, when we're looking to places that it's not where you're living, try to be like, try not to jump too fast into conclusions, because things even the way people think sometimes are not the same. And yeah. It's really hard to, yeah, I just think, yeah, just be more careful because, yeah, people are not in general.
I think that at least in the context of countries with large Jewish populations like the U.S., not that there's actually a large Jewish population here, but for a Jewish population, it's large. the concern trolling around the rise of anti-Semitism and voicing it as the thing that is causing it, at least if it exists on the left and in anarchist circles, and now increasingly that the right is taking advantage of it, is Jews' conflation with Israel, right? And so if you are concerned about anti-Semitism and you are Jewish, the thing that the crying about anti-Semitism is not the solution to that. The American Jews publicly throwing Israel under the bus as hard as possible is how you address that, right? You address that by making it extremely clear at every opportunity that these two things cannot be conflated, that the only kind of people that can, there are two kinds of people who conflate Zionism with Judaism. Those that are trying to validate and legitimize Zionism by conflating it with Judaism, and those that are trying to implicate Judaism with Zionism. And so that's why that drives me crazy.
Okay, I understand, but I'm just like, this guy's from Oregon. I was just, using the opportunity to call attention to something else. On your relationship with this article specifically, making 100% sense for me.
Yeah. All right. We can.
Yeah. Is there anything else?
That's all I've got on that. Almost more venting than news. Well, I mean, it's been the news for the year. But, certainly. Yeah. And I guess, and how anarchists interact with that, we could come back to as well. We live in a relatively small city, but that has an anti-Zionist Jewish organization, which I think is pretty fucking cool. It's not my thing, because there's still some like religious stuff in it that is off-putting, but I'm happy for them and I'm glad that they're doing the thing.
Anti-Zionist, what did you say? Can you repeat
that? So there are three anti-Zionist Jewish groups in our city, and one of them is explicitly anarchist.
Yes,
that's
true. Yeah.
And I think that's really great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go back to thinking 2025. It was a fucking long year. So fucking many things happen, and I would say for me in particular, both on the general level and on a personal level too. So it's weird. It feels like it's easy to forget for me everything that happened. I think the first semester feels like an entire different year than the second semester for me. The second one was much faster, I guess, in my feeling about it. The first one was, it was long. I don't know, but you had, because you're a news nerd something, you brought less when we were talking last night, like you brought a lot of things that I thought were important things and that anarchists definitely at least thought about it, and many anarchists engaged with it in one or other way. So you want to bring it?
Yeah. I mean, this was, anarchists are one of our fixations is borders, Yeah. And borders changed a lot this year. That's not true. Geographically, but the nature of borders fundamentally changed this year. Not that they were ever not weaponized, but they were weaponized in new ways and against new populations of people.
Yes.
Both our ability to travel back and forth across borders, depending on who we are, has become touchy and limited. Yep. And also for many anarchists, even their ability to speak publicly without being cast across back across the American borders.
Yeah.
Has fundamentally shifted. And so, yeah, trying to figure out what the new terrain for speech and activity in the context of, like, increasingly weaponized borders in that department looks like.
I think in the immigration thing, like, it also triggered a lot of actions in the country that brought together from anarchists and no anarchists.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting thing.
Yeah.
And people did, people who are not paying attention to, want to call it solidarity actions, started to pay more attention to it. And things is, this really made, it gave more a feeling of like, the persecution that people were like, if we want to compare with the anti-Semitism, it was like I would say like the immigrants here became the new target of not anti-Semitism, but you know,
yeah,
that's the thing. Like, then you know someone and you have to hide them, you're always worried, like. As an example, like, no examples. it made a lot of, like, anarchists, because that became something so big. It started really also to anarchists were paying attention to it before. So I guess it's not the anarchists, but like the rest of the people that were not anarchists or started paying more attention to it. I will pause it. So one second. Yeah. So the immigration thing was a theme for 2025. Do you have any other thoughts on it?
Yeah, I thought what you were saying about it being not just anarchists, but I think anarchists have helped produce, how do I say it, like the images that people know to copy. Maybe that's giving us too much credit, but I think
don't worry. Historically, they never give anarchists too much credit.
Fair enough. I've been very proud that, like, yeah, a lot of the people that you see, you know, getting up in cops' faces or like pulling their cars in front of, ICE vehicles have been like wine moms from the fucking suburbs. You know, where just like it has entirely bricked the liberal brain that. The U.S. has a secret police now, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like lots of people have been taking really serious risks, you know, regardless of their status. I think people with a really fragile status here have been doing, like, crazy, brave shit, you know, and throwing down on their own and their friends, you know, and family's behalf. And then even people who, you know, are, yeah, from like a suburb and might not know that they know anybody who's undocumented, you know, have been throwing themselves in harm's way in ways that, you know, maybe a few years ago we would have said was like, well, nothing can happen to this person. But I think that there are very few people in this country that nothing can happen to at this point. I think even if one thinks that they are very comfortable wine mom in the suburbs,
yeah,
I think the current administration can probably take all that from you, you know?
Yeah. It definitely feels like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, credit where credit's due. And yeah, it's been really heartening, to see people, getting out of their bubbles, getting out of their boxes and really figuring out how they can get involved. I watched, they asked about multimedia in the prompt. I saw, a short documentary about these two brothers who are in high school. And they spend their weekends chasing ice around Chicago. And they interviewed their parents. And their parents are both like...
Ice parents?
No, their parents.
Oh, their own parents.
Yes.
Okay.
And they, their parents are like Methodists or something, you know? Like one of these like Christian families with like 8 kids or whatever.
Yeah.
And these are like their 2 oldest boys. And they're like, yeah, I mean, the mom took them out doing that. One weekend because, you know, she felt like that was the representation of her faith.
Yeah.
And then her sons were like, oh, this is a thing we could just do all the time. And now these 2 high school kids just run around, harassing ice in that obsessive way that like only high schoolers have time and ingenuity, you know, like they were running comms in ways that like, you know, I think it would take an adult a while to figure out how to do.
Yeah.
And it was just like really sweet and heartwarming. Yeah. And the parents were just like super proud of their kids. And it sounded like the kids, you know, were again, like one of these things where it's like the kids were like, yeah, we've been like thrown on the ground and like held at gunpoint and all this stuff. Things that like are definitely traumatizing, you know, like,
yeah.
The fact that these were like white kids from the burbs was definitely protecting them from being like deported or murdered, but was not insulating them entirely from consequences, you know?
Yeah.
It was really heartwarming.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one thing. I think that we have to also give credits to the youth. Like a lot of times, I think, especially you have been your issues with the way youth act. Not that I don't, but I feel like you're a little harsher than I am. And so so let's give them credit too.
Yeah.
Like they have like, yeah, they, I forgot what the word I was going to say. It was not careful. Like they don't care much about the consequences sometimes. And sometimes that's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, since 2020, I've given, you know, Gen Z and if Gen Alpha, maybe they're old enough at this point, 5 stars for bravery and reckless abandon, you know, it's reliability and, the ability to be anywhere at any point, at any agreed upon time and any version of follow through that isn't running out of your house and filming yourself committing felonies or whatever.
Yeah.
But everything else, they're very, you know, but yeah, if anyway.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Next point.
All right. This is an axe I've been grinding all year. I know I've discussed it on the podcast with you and when we had our guest B, I discussed it. And that is Venezuela. We are recording today. We woke up this morning to find out that Venezuela had been casually militarily overthrown by the U.S. government.
Yeah.
Right? They struck several places and then just kidnapped the president and his wife and put them on a plane to the U.S. And for legal reasons that nobody in our country understands.
Yeah.
Without the usual narrative building that we've become accustomed to in the last 25 years, you know?
Yeah. And let's just make clear here that We're not defending the Venezuela government.
Sure.
I know, but sometimes you need to say the obvious. Yes. Like, it's just like, it doesn't mean anarchy. Like, overthrowing the Venezuelan president. It means, like, the U.S. president just said that the U.S. is going to run Venezuela. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, and that's part of what I, my axe to grind here is, like, especially in 2019. All right, so in an American context, and maybe less so in Europe, but at least in an American context, when we discuss things publicly, and I know that a lot of things get discussed publicly that didn't used to because of the nature of the internet, but when you're arguing with someone on Twitter or on some large forum or whatever it is, when we're discussing countries, what we're doing, it like, we are... We're discussing whether or not they could be overthrown, basically, right? And so this, right, that in the American context, when you're talking about the leader of another country being repressive or bad or whatever the thing is, like,
yeah.
I've been saying this all year, that the thing that we are, it's consensus building for invasion, and anarchists need to understand when they are participating in consensus building for invasion.
Yeah, one thing, and I think I've said that here before, I think sometimes the way you say things, for me at least, it sounded like you're defending the other government, and that's where we usually bump our heads. But I think the point is, like, and that's what sometimes made me mad, with, like, the American mentality, is like, you don't have to fucking save anyone. Like, don't fucking... Saviors are suckers. Hate saviors. Because saviors think they know what's best. They think they are looking at you and are understanding what happened. And then they are going to save. So, and then you say, so what? Should we do nothing about... No! There is your whole government. There's your whole country. So... like, you know, that's where you want to fight. You want to fight, like, your country is trying to overthrow another country. So just show all the ways your country is doing, like, you know, you are not, you don't need to defend the other government because, yeah, fuck the other governments. But pay attention to what's happening here. So what is the U.S. doing? Like, what are their relation to the... And you want to point all of this, because otherwise what is going to happen is that, like, you remove the other government and you put the U.S. government in place in the other...
And so, I mean, particularly in 2019, the last time that the Trump administration was trying to coup Venezuela, what we saw were a series of articles in various anarchist media about... you know, how, oh, the anti-government protests there are more than just right-wing, you know, January 6th style. I mean, they didn't say January 6th at the time because we hadn't had that yet, but style protests, right? And which is interesting to me because in 2014 and 15, when those protests were getting going, even the BBC and mainstream news pointed to them as middle-class right-wing protests.
But that, you don't fuck, that's all, you're also like, don't fucking trust the news absolutely, because they did that all, like, I've seen they do also doing that, like, in other places where they pointed to the anarchists and they, of course, there were both were there, the right-wing middle class and anarchists and whatever, they were there because something was happening, but of course, like, it's easier just to...
Yes, well, if it's just you and the right-wing middle class pouring out into the streets, maybe you should ask yourself what's going on.
I can't bring examples without giving too much away about, but that's not... in things, they look much more meshed up
from
the outside, and they are not that meshed up. And there is, like, a conflict between these two in place. It's not just, like, one is next to the other and they're chanting against the government. That's not what
and
is
so
happening.
When I believe the media is when it seems like they're saying things that are not in their interest.
Yeah, I'm just saying that because sometimes it's so hard to understand what's happening, the way you can help a lot of times is like, turn to your government to see what they're doing, see how they are, you know, that.
Yeah.
So that's
well, and that's what I'm talking about is if the mouthpiece for Britain is saying that those are right-wing protests, that's not in the U.S. and Britain's interest. What's in the U.S. and Britain's interest is to say that these are popular protests.
Yeah.
Right? Not to say that they're right-wing party
backed. Yeah, but the point is that they meshed everything together. That's the point.
Anyway, and again, within the U.S. context, when we're discussing countries, and we should know this by now after Iraq and Libya, right, and Honduras and fucking Haiti, right, all just since the beginning of the war on terror, like, that when we're discussing countries and we're discussing their governments, we are publicly consensus building for the invasion and overthrow of those countries. And anarchists participate in that part, and yet we no longer participate in the anti-war efforts against those things, right? I haven't seen one anarchist-initiated or even like anarchist-heavily participated anti-Venezuelan invasion protest or articles. Like, it's fucking embarrassing. All that shit is coming from state socialists. They're the only ones who give a flying fuck whether or not we invade Venezuela. The liberals are on board. The fucking anarchists don't give a shit and just write articles about Maduro bad. Sure, Maduro bad. But understand that when you're writing those articles, the thing you're doing is producing propaganda that discourages the anarchist and anarchist left from participating in an anti-war movement. Because it's
anarchists should not step out, but they should like point like how such and such thing how it's interesting for the U.S. government that such and such thing happened, how the U.S. government is acting, like that's the kind of things they need to make public, like how what's the role of the U.S. in this thing that is happening in this country.
In 2019, instead of pointing to the fact that the U.S. was backing Juan Guaido, this fucking random dude, and was letting him, right, give away Sitco, where, you know, not to get into all the fucking economics that we don't usually deal with as anarchists, but like the place that the thing they trade for food, you know?
Yeah.
Essentially. Right. That the U.S. was repossessing this and all this shit. Like, instead of pointing to that stuff and pointing to the fact that like many people at that point involved in the protests, right, are there because there's like not enough food and massive inflation, which are the direct products of what the U.S. had been doing since 2014.
Yeah.
Instead, the anarchist outlets are pointing at, the street fighting and, you know, and I just, and
the police repression. That's important to publicize the anarchist perspective when they're, you know, I think that's important, like, to, I don't know if acknowledge is the right word, but like if anarchists from another country say, hey, this is happening here, you want to make it public, but you want to put it in context, like in terms of like, okay, so, and then what's the U.S. doing? Like, they're doing that there, and what the U.S. is, like, how the U.S. is, you know, that should be, because it is important, like as an international solidarity, you want to, like when anarchists from other places are telling you what is going on, you want to make it public the same way you want them to make public the things that are happening to, you know, it's, but also understand the role of like the place where you live, what it's influencing or not on it. So yeah, because otherwise it sounds like there is, and I get very annoyed because it seems like the only ones that don't just do what you are criticizing are also like really the anarchist platformists that are very narrow-minded and tend to...
They are the only anarchist group that's come out against the invasion of Venezuela.
Yeah,
that's true.
And, but they are also just
probably
against...
because they're closer to the left.
Okay.
You're almost...
You're not letting me finish, and now I'm getting... Yeah,
sorry.
I'm just saying they're... And the way they do it, it's also fucking awful. So that's what I was... So the way they doing, like, they become just, like, defending the fucking other... it annoys me because they really like, usually, to point fingers to other anarchists saying, this is not anarchist, this is not anarchist, this is not anarchist, this is not anarchist. But they are a lot of time, like, supporting state measures in a lot of ways that it's, like, fuck you, you know, like, you don't have a conversation with us, but anyway, I'm annoyed. Okay, we're moving topic, yeah. Or we're...
Anyway, but yeah, so just as we now invade Venezuela and overthrow Venezuela, just looking back on how we participated in that process.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Did anarchists in the U.S. do anything to prevent, even symbolic things, to prevent the invasion of Venezuela? Or did at least three left libertarian outlets publish articles making a case about why it's not really bad if Maduro gets thrown out because, you know, he's bad? I think that's part of it. I think it plays down what it means when someone gets deposed, right? Gaddafi bad. Gaddafi 100% bad. Don't get me wrong. But Libya went from being the African country with the highest human development index to a country with a warlord, like, formation and, like, an active human chattel slavery, public active human chattel slavery trade, because the U.S. went in there and helped overthrow the current thing, you know? You don't get a bunch of anarchist communes or whatever when that shit happens. You get the fucking U.S. or oil companies or some shit like that. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Wrapping up this one.
Sure.
I still have to bring something.
Yeah.
It's just because we're going circles now.
Yeah, yeah.
You mentioned before, and I think it's an important thing to bring about 2025, that how... the anarchists are explicitly becoming also target in a very concerning way in this country.
Yes.
And we are yet to see if this will develop, but I think it's a concerning thing for people. Just be aware, pay attention. It might end in nothing. It might, you know, or in my ends in something. So, yeah, pay attention. Remember to fly under the radar the better you can. And, yeah, these are my wishes for 2026.
I was kind of thinking about that, but, like, just because I've been reading a lot of different things, and two of them intersect at fascism in Italy and anarchists fleeing Italy and anarchists arriving in various points in Latin America, resulting in these like robust and like militant anarchist milieus down there. And I was just thinking about, like, what an anarchist exodus of the U.S. would mean for all the countries. We wound up in just, like, the most, like, pardon my term, just, like bitch-ass annoying fucking anarchist milieus, like arriving in droves in, like, Mexico and fucking wherever else we all wind up landing.
Yeah.
Just like the most whiny, fucking pedantic, like annoying.
Yeah.
Like
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Here's to not having to flee the country. Yeah. All right. So let's see what else went down this year. Yeah. So we have a secret police now. And that dovetails with borders having been, like, weaponized against speech.
What do you mean, action. Have a secret police now?
ICE is a secret police.
Oh, okay. It's just there's always been secret police.
Yeah, I would say, like, not on the scale.
Okay.
Like, you...
okay, no.
I would even say part of a secret police is not being able to identify, like, when the FBI... came to my house, they identified themselves. Like, both what organization they worked for and their names.
Okay.
That is relatively standard in our country. Okay. There are plenty of exceptions, I'm sure. But yeah. as a matter of policy, there were not groups...
Here's the thing.
There were not groups of men with their faces covered and a refusal both to identify themselves on an interpersonal level... and even on a what organization they work for level.
But also just a note. Here, the reason why sometimes these organizations, they identify themselves is because they have a much more larger thing going on where they don't. So it's kind of for them to go under the radar, you know? No, we identify ourselves.
Yes.
And then you're not worried if they don't. And they're right there.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway, next.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, as a slightly larger, like, pivoting from Venezuela but staying down south, our government probably just facilitated, almost certainly just facilitated, like, an electoral coup in Honduras against, like, their first leftist government in several generations. And, like, heavily influenced and interfered in, like, the Argentinian election to keep Javier Milei's party in power.
Yeah.
So, I guess what I'm zooming out to is
such
just,
a
like...
70s feeling.
I know, yeah, just a 60s, yeah, 70s. A 80s,
yeah.
90s. Woof. Nicaragua was the 90s, you know. It keeps... a return to really a type of aggressive fucking with Latin America that we, unless you were paying close attention, hadn't seen in a decade. I mean, we did sort of coup Honduras as recently as 2009 and maybe Haiti in 2006, but this is a little more brazen than I've become used to. Yeah. In the last decade or so. What else?
You're the news nerd. And
fair enough.
But, yeah, I think you brought a lot of important issues. Well, that said, again, like, on a personal level, even though, like, I had the feeling I have not been as active on the... anarchist milieu in general, but when I stop and thinking, like, we did visit, and for me, some more new, like, anarchist or anarchist-ish places.
Oh, we did go to a new anarchist space.
More than one, actually. Yeah. Oh, no, just one. No. Anyway, met with anarchists from other places through the year, so, and I participated in events, and this time, it doesn't... Not going to name the events, not going to name the people, not going to name any of these, but this happened. So
I want to
there
name
were
the
a
two
lot of
places that I
events
I,
and meetings
okay.
and
I want to
interesting
the,
people and all that.
The two anarchist spaces or anarchist spaces that I went to that I really enjoyed. There is the Rhizome House in Cleveland that I visited that is fantastic. Not actually a house, more of a storefront. Super worth checking out if you roll through that city. They've got a bunch of cool stuff going on there. The space is huge and one of those like really like Rust Belt situations where you just have a size, space, and resources that the coasty mind cannot comprehend. And then speaking of the coasts, in Philadelphia, I went to Iffy Books, which is probably a little anarchist.